Okay, hello and welcome everyone to our call today called From Breakup to Breakthrough. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the line today. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Francine Kay. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Francine a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, I've been friends with Francine for a good few years now, and I've had the great pleasure of watching her talent and her speciality of helping people create great relationships really be noticed and recognised very widely, particularly in the UK. Like Francine's wisdom and insight is actually regularly sought out in the media. She's the relationship expert for the Channel 5 program called The Right Stuff, BBC's The Big Question, GMTV, CNN, and she also writes for national magazines Red, Women and Home, Prima, Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire and a host of other publications. She's also a regular guest on national radio and has just recently published a book through Hay House called The Divorce Doctor. So there's no end to the gifts that Francine has been sharing with the world in the world of relationships. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call a very special guest and my dear friend Francine Kay. How are you doing there, Francine?
Hey, thank you. I'm doing really, really well. How's California?
It's great. It's a beautiful day and a beautiful time to be running this call.
Fabulous.
Francine, I thought we'd actually start at the top by just really exploring this whole area of relationships. I know particularly intimate relationships are a very challenging area for so many people. And I was just wondering if you could kick us off by sharing what you believe are the essential elements for creating a great relationship.
You know, that's such a great question, Damien, and this is like the big question, isn't it? How do we do relationships? How do we make these things work? And I think that the two components that people have to really get about relationships is that we have love and we have behaviors. So you can love somebody very, very much, but if their behaviors are just not acceptable to you, you really, really can't be in relationship with them. And I know that sounds like it might be pretty obvious, but people are struggling because they're actually saying, yes, but I love him or I love her, and, you know, I can't imagine being without them, but their behaviors just are not acceptable for me to live with. And I think if people can make a distinction between the fact that they can carry on loving someone, whether they are in or out of relationship with them, but it's just their behaviors that they can't live with, then they don't have to close their hearts down. You know, when a relationship comes to an end, it doesn't mean to say that love comes to an end. Love lingers on. And so I think the most important thing to say about anybody who's going through a breakup or might be considering not knowing whether they should stay or leave the relationship, they should really start considering making the distinction between love and behaviours.
That's a very, very powerful distinction. Now, before we actually delve deeper into the topic, Francine, I was just wondering if you could actually add some of your own personal story to the mix, just to give people a feeling of the journey you've been on.
Yeah, with pleasure. It's been a long journey, actually, that started in 1982. And I remember I'd been married for a couple of years, and we went on a personal development seminar, and it was one of the first in the UK. And it was terribly disrespectful and ever so in your face. And I loved it. I loved every bit of it. It was like a really eating a great meal, the best meal I'd ever eaten. But my husband decided that actually this wasn't necessary at all. And so we didn't need to do anything around personal development. And so we didn't. And at sort of 23 years old, not really knowing my own mind terribly much, I kind of went with my husband's mind. And there I remained for the next sort of 14 years or so, until not having my own identity actually became a little painful. So I remember one day, about four years or so before we actually split up, I went to my local college to sign up for a drama course. Right. Only there wasn't any drama course that session because there wasn't enough people going to it or something. So I signed up for counselling instead.
Okay.
And really, that was the start of me getting into personal development work. And I did a four-year counselling diploma.
Wow.
And then, sadly, we split up. You know, and my story isn't really very different to anybody else's. You know, you have somebody who has affairs, but that isn't really the real reason that relationships break up, because there's a part responsibility on both sides.
Mm.
And, you know, there was my own personal responsibility about why was my husband even having an affair.
Mm.
So, you know, to speak really honestly, I think that all of us have a personal responsibility in relationships. It isn't always the other person who's to blame. And you know yourself. You know, it's not like something you can hide from. You know what your contribution is towards it. So anyway, we got divorced. I had two very small children. They were 5 and 8 at the time.
Mm.
And I wanted it to be as amicable as possible. And I wanted my children to be parented effectively. So I took all the money that I had and I whizzed over to San Diego.
Mm.
And I went on a course called Parent Effectiveness Training, which really helped me to design how I was going to parent going forward. And it was a very conscious way of parenting. I decided that I wasn't going to remarry at that point because I didn't want to be the Brady Bunch. I really wanted to sort of bring my children up the way I wanted to bring them up. And I didn't really want any outside interference. So it was a very conscious decision that I made to do that, armed with these skills and tools, which I started actually teaching at that time. And then coaching came to the country round about the late 80s, I would say.
Mm.
And one of the first courses that came was there was either Coach U or there was the Coaches Training Institute. And I chose the Coaches Training Institute and trained to do coaching. So now I had the parent effectiveness training, I had the coaching. And from here on in, I just studied everything that I could, from NLP to I became a family mediator, I'm a family consultant, I did social work. I did absolutely everything that I could to get all the skills and tools that I needed, because there wasn't anybody around at that point, you know, other than your regular sort of counselors or possibly in this country relate to help you get through. How do you emerge positively when you've had a breakup? How do you not become bitter and twisted? You know, how do you stay positive, regain your identity, communicate effectively with your ex? There isn't any rules or guidebooks. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to make it up myself.
Mm.
I'm going to do all this studying. I'm going to take the best bits from everything and everybody. And doing that, I've created a whole model that I use and have used now effectively with my clients for over 12 years, which works. So, you know, which I'm thrilled about. And, of course, the whole of my life's work now is written up in my book, in the Divorce Doctor book.
Mm.
And, you know, all the skills and strategies that I use are in that book.
Mm. Fantastic.
And that brings us up to where we are now.
It's absolutely amazing what you've been able to pull together, Francine. And I actually just want to pick up on a little theme that you mentioned there, because I think it's quite a big one for people to get their head around. And that's this whole, you mentioned the whole notion of responsibility of both sides. And quite often when we're going through relationship hardship or challenge, it's very hard to do anything other than blame the other person. And I was just wondering if you could provide some insight for people who may find themselves in that area of blaming the other person on how they can actually see that it's, I guess, a relationship is a collaboration, and how they can actually accept responsibility on both sides.
Mm. You know, I'm actually of the opinion, after all of these years, I'm not sure that any two people have ever really met each other.
Mm.
And that's quite an interesting statement. And the reason that I'm saying that is because when we come to relationship, we bring with us everything I call your old wiring.
Mm.
And your old wiring is made up of the picture that you've created of the world. So somewhere between the ages of about 5 and 15, we create a picture of the world. It's almost like you're born, you're in your mother's tummy, you're born, and you're in a kind of bubble until the bubble bursts. And the bubble bursts exactly when some major thing happens in your life. Maybe you move, maybe you've had an accident, maybe you hear your parents shouting, maybe somebody was having a go at you, maybe you fell off your bike. It doesn't really matter what it is that happened, but there's generally a catalyst event between the ages of about sometimes people can remember back to 18 months and 15 years, where the ego kicks in.
Mm.
So at a very young age, the ego kicks in and you start creating a sense of yourself.
Mm.
Now, if that sense of yourself is created with fairly negative wiring, which is something like, no one listens to me, I'm not important enough, I don't have a voice. Or it begins with, I have to be responsible, I have to take care of myself, I have to do everything. Because of whatever circumstance you found yourself in, what you tend to do is spend the rest of your life creating evidence for this old wiring that you have created.
Mm.
So if I give you an example, I had a client a little while ago who woke up in her parents' bedroom where she was sleeping, and she must have been about 2.5, 3 years old. And when she woke up, they weren't there. And this is the first time she's woken up and her parents aren't in the room.
Mm.
So she gets out of bed, goes down the stairs, out into the street, looking for her mum or her dad.
Mm.
And then all hell breaks loose and neighbors find her. And the first thing that she can remember at that age is her mother saying to her, don't you ever upset people like that again.
Mm.
So you can imagine now what kind of old wiring that this person has created. So she spent the rest of her life deciding that she mustn't upset people and finding evidence for the fact that she mustn't.
Mm.
So at school, she tends to be a good girl. You know, if there's any trouble going on, she tries to kind of sort it out. She doesn't like people being upset around her. And so it goes on.
Mm.
You may have a little boy who grows up in a family where, you know, all kinds of things happen in families. Maybe mummy wasn't well. Maybe he found his mum on the floor and she wasn't well, and he dialed for the ambulance. And, you know, everyone said what a responsible little boy he was. Or he looked after his brothers, or whatever it was that he did to create a responsibility sort of picture of his life.
Mm.
And that's it. He goes for the rest of his life creating, you know, responsibility. So I might have a couple who come to see me, and she might say to me, he is so controlling. If he wasn't so controlling, if he didn't try to do absolutely everything, you know, we could probably have quite a nice relationship.
Mm.
And, you know, he comes to me and he says, do you know what, she's kind of like bland. It's like, I can never get to her. It's not, nothing ever upsets her. She's always on an even keel. And one thing, we've not had one argument in all of these years. But the thing is, it's almost like you're with somebody who's like Pollyanna the whole time.
Mm.
Well, you know, because you've got one person who can't upset anybody, so they're trying to keep the peace and be nice.
Mm.
And you've got one person who's being responsible. And both of them are getting the wrong idea of what the other one is about. One calls it controlling. One calls it, well, you know what, we're not getting a connection here.
Mm.
So and that's kind of like the basis of the work that I do, because until a couple understand their old wiring and they understand that that piece of old wiring is in relationship with their partner's old wiring,
mm.
they're never really going to understand how they operate in relationship. So when you talk about blame, what they're doing is they're blaming the other person, and the other person is just being who they're being.
Mm.
Only they're misinterpreting it. So we translate. So when I say to you, you're being really controlling, and you look at me and you think, but I'm not. I'm trying to make life as easy as possible for you. And I'm being responsible, and I don't see it as that. It's because I haven't understood your world. So that's really the first place that people need to look. And once you can understand that, there is no blame anymore. I get couples to a stage, or even individuals to a stage, where they realize there is no blame. Can you imagine how liberating that is?
That's amazing. Now, Francine, I just wanted to delve deeper in here, for just exploring this whole concept of old wiring. That, is it been your experience that most couples actually attract each other so that they can work through these either karmic patterns or old wiring, so they can ultimately transcend it to move closer to be able to seeing the other?
You know, I think that you're right. I mean, isn't it interesting, because I have people who come and see me and they say to me, why is it that I always seem to attract the same kind of man?
Mm.
Or I attract the same kind of woman, which is incredibly interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
And I say to them, well, how many have you attracted like this?
Mm.
And they might say, well, 3 or 4. And so I say to them, well, then if you've attracted three or four of the same type of person, guess what? The common denominator is you.
Mm.
So what is it that you're doing to attract these people?
Mm.
So you might have somebody who is attracting, who maybe has the old wiring of, I'm not loved enough.
Mm.
I don't have a voice. I'm not listened to. So I'm now going to go out there and find maybe the most gregarious, the most outgoing, the most, maybe the most selfish, the most self-centered person that I can possibly find.
Mm.
And what I'm attracted to, it looks like at the beginning, is this big personality. Oh my God, there's so much fun to be with, you know? So, and there's all of that going on. And at the very beginning, they're very interested in me because I'm something new. And then after a while, what we notice is that this person's personality is more important to them than rather being in the relationship. Mm. And the other person has now attracted somebody again who doesn't seem to listen to them, who doesn't seem to love them enough. And the whole idea was that if they were to find somebody who was fairly big and outgoing and out there, and they could make that person love them and listen to them, the little girl inside that made up that story would get healed in some way. Mm. So what we're doing a lot of the time when we're attracting people is we're trying to attract somebody through whom we can heal ourselves.
Mm, that's very interesting.
If only they love me enough, then any feeling that I had of not being loved enough, hopefully that will heal.
Mm.
But no one can heal that because that's your stuff. And anyway, it's all made up. Made up by a child who was surviving the best they could at the time.
Mm. It's amazing when you
look at it. Doesn't it?
Absolutely, looking at it in that way, these filters that we take on and look at the world through are often created by a small child. It's such a powerful thing to distinguish.
Created by a small child.
Mm.
So, you know, and what's interesting is that it actually doesn't matter what age a person comes to see me.
Mm.
So I could have a 64-year-old man come to see me and we could uncover his old wiring and find out that all day long he's 4 years old emotionally.
Mm, well.
And this could be a man who runs, he's a CEO of a big corporate conglomerate global enterprise.
Mm.
And yet emotionally all day long he's four.
Mm.
And very probably in relationship with another 4-year-old.
Mm. It's very interesting, actually. I'm working with a gentleman a long time ago in my corporate career who was such a powerful man around the office, but when it got to speaking on the phone to his wife, you could just see that he did retreat into this small childlike self and was totally disempowered, fearful, and it was just so interesting just to sit as a casual observer watching how he could move so quickly between the two different archetypal energies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've literally had clients exactly like that, you know. So I'll have a guy, or even, you know, I had a very high power business lady as well, and all of this search for, you know, doing well and achieving and succeeding, you know, in this particular story turned out to be that her daddy had always wanted a little boy.
Mm.
And he'd had girls, and she decided that really she should be the boy,
right.
And that he never really had. And she was going to succeed, and she was going to do well, and, you know, daddy was going to be proud of her. And she basically almost worked herself into an early grave because she worked and worked and worked. And, of course, it wasn't until her relationship and really relationships around her started crumbling that she realized that her strategy was not working. You know, so what we're doing an awful lot of times, well, I think most of the time, in our relationship is still operating at the level that we created our picture of the world as a survival strategy for a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old up until about the age of about 15.
Mm.
You know, and when you understand that it's the child that's running the show, and when you understand your particular show and what that child is running with you, I mean, and that's exactly the work that I do, and we go into the nth degree, but anyway, in one session can figure out exactly what's going on, So you might take you months of regression therapy, but my methods are much quicker than that. So, you know, we figure it out pretty quickly. And then, you know, you're presented with the idea that you're actually run. You're running your life. You're driven by a child. It's just not appropriate behavior for somebody over the age of about 25 upwards.
Absolutely.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's absolutely crazy. Had you thought of it like that? Had you thought of it like that?
It's a very interesting question. With these filters, there is lots of different psychologists that say we form our worldview and from the ages of 2 to 5 and then spend the rest of our lives trying to gather evidence to support that worldview. So it is it's very interesting just taking that awareness and contextualizing it within the sphere of intimate relationships and how two people coming together are literally playing out that kind of thinking with each other. And I find it totally fascinating.
It is so fascinating.
People who are on the call who may already be in a relationship and that they intuitively feel is going off course. I was just wondering if you could actually share some of the symptoms they should be looking out for in order to start doing some work on the relationship.
I guess if you're thinking about symptoms, there really is a whole list that I would be asking somebody. So how do you actually figure out whether your relationship is on the rocks or not? So, I mean, some of the first two questions is if you're experiencing aggressive behavior or if you're experiencing physical or mental abuse, you can be sure that the other person doesn't like you very much. Now, I know that sounds an incredibly obvious thing to say, but I have had and worked with quite a few people who have actually made excuses around that, and people do. You know, they actually, well, you know, he's under a lot of pressure. She's under a lot of stress. You know, she can't help it. You know, she lashes out now and then. It doesn't really hurt. It's not a big deal. Or, you know, okay, it was only a, you know, he shouts, okay, but, you know, there's a lot going on. No, here's the bottom line. If somebody's being aggressive or somebody's mentally or physically abusing you, not only do they not like you, they don't like themselves very much. So I'm of the opinion that there is no random behavior. No random behavior. So everybody out there is behaving in a way in order to get their needs met, whatever those needs happen to be. So if I hit you and I'm going to try and inflict pain upon you, it's because I'm in pain somewhere. And you know what? You aren't put here to heal anybody else's pain. And if you're feeling the backlash of their pain, you know, you really got to consider getting out of the relationship. So that's obvious ones. But then you've got to look a little bit deeper and you've got to ask yourself, have you made any unacceptable personal compromises? You know, are there things that you're doing that really aren't acceptable to you? And if you had a choice, you really wouldn't do them. They're just getting to the stage where they're actually unacceptable. And do you have a partner who puts you down or undermines you or embarrasses you, perhaps in public or perhaps just at home? Are you able to speak openly and say what you want to say? Do you find that you're treading on eggshells a lot? You know, are you able to just come out and have a conversation without fear of consequences, retribution, you know, backlash, consequences? Are you able to be fully self-expressed? Are there lies? Are there incidents of deception? You know, and are they regular? Is it happening again and again? Are you being ignored? You know, are you not being listened to? Or if you're the person who perhaps actually, you know, is perhaps thinking of leaving and you've got strong feelings of guilt around that, you might want to really examine how guilt keeps you stuck where you are, because guilt's an interesting one. I can't leave because, you know, where would she go? Where would he go? He won't have anyone. He's not a well person. You know, all of these kind of things might happen. I can't leave because, you know, he's worked so hard and there won't be very much if we have to split everything up. Well, you know, guilt actually is quite a selfish emotion. And most people wouldn't regard themselves as being selfish. But if you feel guilty, what you're actually not doing is giving the other person a chance to grow.
Mm.
So you're saying they're not able to cope. They won't be able to manage. You know, they're not creative, resourceful, or whole enough to do this without me.
Mm.
So you really, if you've got guilty feelings, you really want to examine your guilt.
Mm.
You know, sometimes people have lost trust in their relationship. They've lost trust in the other person. Maybe they've, you know, they've been lied to again, or something has happened. Their person's not their word. They're not reliable. You know, maybe their partner abuses drugs or alcohol, or the obvious one, they've been cheated on.
Mm.
Or there's excuses about everything, you know, recurring conflicts, just over and over again, the same conflict. You know, and are you really willing to put up with the conflict? And if you haven't found a resolution, why not? Why haven't you found a resolution? So if you can answer yes to most of those questions, you've pretty much got some symptoms, you know, that would be leading you to thinking that your relationship just isn't going to work. You just fundamentally, maybe your values just don't match. You know, and it can be simple things that actually didn't bother you at the beginning, like, you know, he's a spender and you're a saver.
Mm.
You know, just things like that, which means that, you know, if you are the saving one, you can't plan. You haven't got security. And if you're the spending one, there's not enough spontaneity in the relationship. You feel just trapped.
Mm.
So it's not like anything, you know, apart from the abuse or the aggressive behavior or the fact that people are just really not being nice to each other, you know, you've really got to look to see what part of it is my responsibility anyway? Is there anything that we can do about it? And do I want to?
Mm.
Yeah, that's the other part. Do I want to?
Mm. Yeah, excellent questions to ask.
So that took us down a little bit, didn't it?
Mm. No, it's an excellent question to ask.
Yeah, I mean that's going to take us down. And I mean, again, it's like what I'm not saying here is that there's any blame. All right, you could come up with that those are the symptoms that are going on in the relationship, and you could say, oh, that's the way the other person is behaving.
Mm.
But I don't generally allow my couples to ever make any judgment on each other without saying how they're partly responsible.
Mm.
So I always have to throw in the question, and you're partly responsible because I was on the Right Stuff about a year ago, and I had a lady come on. And how it works on the Right Stuff is callers call in, and I'm just sitting there on the settee with Matthew Wright, and they say, so what's the next call? And I've got no idea what the person's going to say, and they come on, and then I have to give some kind of, you know, some kind of remedy or some kind of advice in like sort of 90 seconds, maybe
right.
Less. And this woman came on and she said, you know, my husband's not talking to me anymore. You know, we don't go outside. We don't do anything. You know, it used to be that we would sit up and have a glass of wine and talk to each other. It was fabulous. And just recently, you know, over the past 6 months, just nothing. And I can't seem to get through to him. And I said to her, and how are you partly responsible for this?
Right.
And it went very quiet, and it went quiet in the studio, and I think everybody wondered what was going to happen next. And she
said, <Can imagine.
laughs> she said, because I don't stop nagging him. I keep on saying to him, why won't you talk to me? Why won't you talk to me? What's going on? What's going on? You know, and the more you do that, the more this guy is just going to kind of withdraw.
Mm.
Because perhaps he doesn't even know what's going on. He hasn't been able to articulate that yet.
Right.
So it's moves us into the whole realm of communication, how we even speak to each other.
Mm. Excellent. Well, some fantastic pointers there, Francine. Now, I mentioned that we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I actually just thought I'm just going to kick you off with a live question, actually, that's just been submitted in through the site while we've been on the call. And this one comes from Rachel, who is in the UK. And Rachel asks, how do you break out of the codependency cycle?
Isn't that interesting? But you know, whenever we talk about codependency, I always try to give people a visual of it. So it would be like if you drew the picture of a little stick man, and on top of that stick man, you drew another one, you'd have a picture of codependency. And why that's a picture of codependency is because neither of them have their individuality, and there isn't enough room in between those two stick men for the entity that's called the relationship. So what you've got there is one who is either maybe controlling or manipulating the other, or one who is needy or clingy to the other. And why codependency is so hard to break out of is because you can't imagine having an identity of your own and being on your own and actually going out there and somebody else is going to love me, I'm going to be able to manage it, I'll have enough finances, all of the components that you can have when you've got your own identity, when you believe that you can look after yourself, when you believe you can take care of yourself and you can handle it. So you kind of lost confidence in yourself in the relationship, and you've got a codependency going on, and neither of you are growing. So you're totally stagnant when it comes to that point. There's no growth at all. And it's an incredibly uncomfortable place to be. And I guess that the only way out of it is it's like asking how you eat an elephant. You have to eat it one bite at a time. The only way out of it is, first of all, to recognize it. So I think it's fantastic that your caller has recognized it. When you can recognize it, you're like, you know, we're many, many steps along the way. So good. That's absolutely brilliant that you can see that that is happening. Now you've got to get yourself out of it. But you've got to have, in order to get out of it, you've got to have an extremely compelling outcome. Because if it's not compelling enough to get out of it, on days where it doesn't look like it's too bad, you will stick around. So a compelling outcome would be something like trying to imagine yourself in the next 10 years still being in exactly the same place and what that would be like. A compelling outcome might be, this is now so painful for me and I've lost track of my own self so much that I feel like I'm disappearing. I need to do something about it now. So you have to create what would be a compelling outcome. And then, you know, if you're thinking of it in terms of a strategy, you have to take at least one action. So if your whole life is intertwined with this person, the first thing that you might have to do, and obviously we don't know in this situation, is do something outside the relationship. Anything. You know, I really don't care if it's just going swimming or if it's going for a daily walk. Anything that you can do that takes you out of the relationship and puts you in a place where you are doing something for yourself. So you have to start regaining your identity and getting some evidence together that you can manage some things without this person. Now, if you can do that, if you can start taking as many actions as you possibly can, one step at a time, because if you've been in a relationship for a while and it's codependent, you know, it's going to be very difficult for you to draw away. This is the first part of codependence. I'm going to talk about something else about codependence in a moment. If you find it very difficult to draw away, you have got to take as many actions as possible, because you won't be able to provide yourself with evidence that you can you can move away from being codependent. So you can't create evidence on anything unless you've taken actions. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You have to. So you start with your compelling outcome, which is, I don't want to be in a codependent relationship anymore because, and this is the pain, this is the reason why. Then you start taking the actions, very, very small ones, that start providing you with some evidence that you can manage on your own, that you can be apart from this person. And this is the other part of codependency I wanted to bring up. In cases where you've got somebody who you are afraid is going to be very ill, or they might harm themselves, or they can't manage without you, it's part of what I call collusion.
Right.
Because if they're plugging into your guilt and your old wiring about your fears and what needs to happen in order for you to be loved, then they've really, really got you caught in there. And that's basically what codependency is about. You know, one person's old wiring, fears, needs are heightened by this person's need of them. You know, and you can't get out of it. because at least this way somebody needs me, somebody wants me, somebody loves me.
Mm.
And if I got out of it, what might they do to themselves? So you have to take these steps to provide yourself with that, with evidence that you can manage without this person in certain areas. Now, the more evidence that you build up, the more you then can move into the belief that it's possible for you to manage without this person and that they're not dead, that they've survived as well. You know, because you've been able to do this, they've survived. You've been able to do that, they've survived. And the more evidence that you build up based on the actions that you've taken, the more belief that you'll have until you eventually have enough evidence that gives you the confidence to leave.
Mm.
Because codependent relationships are not healthy relationships. They can't possibly be because you haven't got the buoyancy of the relationship where both of you are inputting 100% and they haven't got the individuality that a person has to have when they're in a relationship so that they're not joined 24/7 at the hip.
Mm.
So that instead of it being a need, I need to be with you. No, in fact, actually, I'm a whole cake. Mm. I have all the ingredients in me that I would ever need. I'm not going to crumble without you. In fact, you are only icing on my cake. Very nice icing. You know, and I'm really glad to have you when you're sticking nicely. You know, we're talking about Harrod's icing here. We're not talking about sort of Lidl icing or any other sort of Aldo icing. We're talking about top stuff here.
Great, a very
that's
nice.
That's what we deserve.
My visual picture. I am the whole cake. Excellent.
Yeah. I'm a whole cake.
Some fantastic distinctions in there.
And, you know, I'm not gonna be putting up. Sorry.
I was just going to say some fantastic distinctions in there for people that are navigating codependency, and thanks, Rachel, in the chat for that question. I've just got another question that's come in from, this one's from Vera, and Vera's also in the UK, and Vera asks, if you've been on your own for a while and you are tentative about getting involved with a new person, what is the best way to meet someone and find out sooner rather than later that they that the relationship has a chance of going somewhere?
Okay, this is such a fab question, Vera. I love this question. So how do you go out shopping for a new mate? How do you go from first date to soulmate, which actually is one of the titles of one of the workshops that I'm putting on very shortly that will be finalized on the website. You know, if you go to the website, actually, and especially for you, Vera, if you go to the website and you download The Secrets of Successful Relationships, which is completely free. It's one of the downloads on there. You're going to get some answers in there as well. But I'm going to answer you here as well. If you're going out shopping and you decide that, you know, you've got to get a whole weekly shop in, what's a good idea most of the time is to make a list of what you need. Because if you don't, generally what happens is you get to the supermarket and you come back with quite a lot of stuff that you wanted on your list, but you don't come back with all of it. And sometimes you're tempted by some really fancy packaging, you know, and you get home and actually when you open the packet, it really doesn't taste as good as it looked on the outside. So, you know, shopping is quite, you know, it's quite a task that really needs a little bit of thought. Otherwise, you just come home with whatever you come home with. And it's the same when you're shopping for a new mate. So what I always do when I'm working with clients, and even when I'm working with couples, and we're working out what they must have, either in order to put their relationships back together again, or what they must have if they're going to be going forward into a new one, is we work out what's most important to them. And I call this your rules for relationship. So really what you want to be doing is actually asking yourself, if I was in the most ideal relationship, you know, what would it provide me with? What would it give me? And do you want to be writing down as many criteria as possible so that you've got an idea of what it is that you want? I mean, you would think that that is quite a simple thing to do and that everybody would be doing it, but we don't. Mm. We go out there, we see a package that looks fairly okay, we go out on a few dates with it and it doesn't seem to be too bad, and before we know it, we're involved. And at no point really have we been actually interviewing this person for the job of being our prospective partner. Mm. And like, isn't that one of the most important things? You know, you'd probably do more due diligence if you were going to change your job. So really what you want to be doing is figuring out what it is that you want. Now, when you go out on your date, it's not like you can, you know, you actually can interview and have them across the desk and like you would do in a job interview, but you want to be very subtle about it. So if it's important for you that somebody's got a moral foundation to their lives, you know, or that they are spiritually aware, then you would be asking relevant questions about, are you a religious person, you know, or what kind of things do you do socially? And you start to get an idea of what this person does with their life and whether or not that fits in with what it is that you're looking for. If you're an extremely active person and you meet somebody who looks really, really fit, and then you discover, actually, you know, they eat rubbish sweets and they don't do anything at all. It just happens to be the way they are right now, and fitness is the very last thing on their agenda. You know, is that the kind of person that you want to be with? And what you do is you come home after you've been on a date and you evaluate it. And you actually write down, this kind of conversation was stimulating. Yes, she made me laugh. Yes, he looks like somebody who's in control of his life. You know, yes, she's independent. You know, she doesn't actually need to be with me, but she wants to be with me. You know, and you start to find out what somebody's interests are, and you don't discount things. Because what you discount at the beginning could turn out to be really, really deal-breakers going forward. So if somebody smokes or somebody drinks in a way that you is not acceptable to you, and you think, oh, well, you know, it won't matter, yes, it will. Yes, it will. So take some time to write down what it is you want from a relationship, and also take some time to evaluate it after you've been on a date. And I would say that you've pretty much got a good idea after about 5 dates with somebody, whether or not their you know, personality, their essence, their substance. And what I would also suggest is that when you go out dating, that you do at least a couple of dates in the early days where you're out during the day together, where you go and pursue an activity together. So make sure that it's not just dinners and in the evening. You know, you really do want to be going out with somebody during the day and seeing them in daylight hours and talking and walking and doing stuff together, because you get much more of an idea of what a person's like and how they react to people around them and situations around them.
That's a great tip.
Was that comprehensive enough, I hope?
That was excellent. So hopefully you've got some good tips there to work on, Vera. Okay, this question comes from Andrew, who's in South Africa. And Andrew asks, "Hi Francine, I'm in a 40-year marriage where one party has grown and the other party hasn't. Is it fair to expect the person that has grown to be held back by the other?"
Oh, you know, it's the very beginning of my book is really starts off with the fact that people change and grow, and they forget to tell the other person that they're doing it. This is such a tricky one, where one person grows and that person perceives that the other person hasn't at the same rate. So what I would say is, first of all, it's only your perception that the other person hasn't grown. But also, it's like, did you offer to take her on that journey with you? Or did you offer to take him on that journey with you? Are you pursuing your own growth? And actually that person hasn't even been invited to share in this with you. Or is it okay for you to grow and the other person to be whoever they happen to be? You know, is that a judgment of yours that the other person hasn't grown, or is it actually holding you back? So sometimes when you get people who get into personal development, or maybe they even change their spirituality, they change their religion, and the other person, I'll give you an example of this. I had some clients a couple of years ago, and she was absolutely a party girl, and he was as well. They ran discotheques, and they did all kinds of stuff, you know, in Ibiza and Spain, all over the place. And then she found religion. And when she found religion, everything changed.
Right.
And she grew in ways that he wasn't even prepared to grow. He didn't even want to go down that path. So, you know, it's not like you can accuse the other person of not growing. maybe they are extremely happy with where they happen to be, and you've changed. So now all that you can actually do is to actually see if it's possible to share what you have learned and your growth with that other person. If that other person hears it, that you're trying to change them, or that they aren't adequate the way they are, they will resist you. They will resist you. But if you invite somebody to share with you what it is that's going on for you in a way which is literally just sharing it, with no agenda about whether they're going to take this on board or they're not, you might find that you actually don't need them to be at the same stage that you're at, because there's plenty of other people who are, and there's still plenty left in the relationship that is so good, you know, that doesn't need that person to be on completely that level where you are, because it just doesn't suit them. It's not necessary for them. So you've got a couple of things going on here. You've either got learning how to accept your partner for where they are in their lives and for the good stuff that they give you, or if it really, really feels like you've moved fundamentally into a completely different area, then, you know, you've got some choices, some very difficult choices to make here. And no one can tell you, no one can say to you whether that's right or wrong. There's a lovely reading called The Path of the Heart. I don't know if you know that one, Damien. It's gorgeous. And it says anything is anything has got a million paths. There's a million paths anywhere. Every path has got a heart. And you stay on the path for the length of time that the path has a heart. If the path really, really has no heart left for you, you have to leave. Because if you stay, you'll wither and die. You can't stay on a path that doesn't have a heart. But you've got to be very careful with paths with hearts. You know, you've got to check very, very carefully that that path really doesn't have a heart for you. So I would say that there's a bit of work to be done there. You know, and it's pretty hard to just answer just not knowing the whole full story. But before you're condemning or judging or blaming or just getting plain frustrated, take a look and see what your partner does provide and whether or not you've actually given them the opportunity to hear what you're doing without compelling them to be on the same journey that you're on, because we're all on our own journeys.
An excellent answer and excellent question, Andrew. It's a challenge that many people face when they start going, particularly on the personal development journey. So I think it's a question that probably will be echoed through many of our listeners. Okay, I just wanted to squeeze in one more listener question, Francine. And this one comes from Kerry, who's in Spain. And Kerry asks, I grew up in an unhappy childhood with parents fighting and then divorcing. When I was 11 years old, I saw lots of cheating, lying and pain, and I find that I'm unable to trust men even today, 15 years later. Have you words to help me find a happy relationship?
It's Terry, you are still living in the story that you made up, and you can't help it. There's no blame and judgment. Most people do it. That is the story that you made up about men and about what life was like when you were a little girl. And so what actually happens now is that no one has a chance of ever being any different, because it's what you're expecting. And in some ways, I'm imagining it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you're choosing people who are going to cheat and lie and cause you pain. So... And those people, again, it's like exactly where we started at the beginning of the conversation. You can't heal yourself through being with one of those people and hoping that they're going to change, because they're not. So you're just attracting yourself to what looks familiar in the hope that if you can make one of these cheating, lying, horrible people love you, the pain will all go away. Now, that's old pain that doesn't even belong to you now. It belongs to the little girl who had to go through it. So what you want to be doing now is going out with and finding people who are very, very different to the type of guys you would normally go out with. So, you know, the ones that you really wouldn't imagine you were going to fancy, but try it out anyway, just to be around some very nice people. You know, do things that nice people do. Start going dancing. You know, start doing something that, you know, maybe volunteering to do something. Go and do things where mostly nice people who have got some good bones in their bodies, you know, and some good thoughts in their heads. Go where people do nice things. And, you know, I don't need to give you a whole list, but you could probably find it. You know, and at the first sign of being with somebody who manifests any of those traits, leave, because that's not where you're going to find love and happiness. It really isn't. You know, and you've got, it's exactly the kind of work that I'm doing with people, is to actually help them to separate themselves from the old wiring and to help them to make those distinctions. You know, that's virtually the core of the work that I do, so that when I work, even if I work with a couple, I always work with the individual to start off with. And we have individual sessions before I bring the couple together, because to put a couple in a room together when, you know, all you're only ever going to discuss are issues and the two of them are very upset, I've never seen how that could possibly work. It just, I just can't even get my head around it. So I see couples individually to start off with, and then I bring them together after they've done this kind of work. You know, I so feel for you, and there is a way out of it. And I definitely would advise you at least to get a copy of the book, because I address it a lot in the book. You know, get in touch as well if you want to, because tough stuff, very tough stuff. And we can sort it out, and you can separate yourself from it, and you can heal your heart and love again, I promise you.
Cool. Excellent, Francine. Some great distinctions there. And thank you, Kerry, for a fantastic question. Well, Francine, we're coming to the end of our hour, and I'm actually blown away with the level of thought and wisdom that you've shared or managed to squeeze into 50 minutes. It's phenomenal, just pulling from all your phenomenal experience over the many years that you've been really studying and investigating and inspiring others in this whole realm of creating great relationships. And I know that there are many people on this call and people who will listen to this recording in the future that would love to find out more about your work and how they can actually get in touch with you. So I was just wondering if you could actually share how people can go about doing that.
Well, yeah, you can go straight to the website. There's two ways to go to the website, www.francinek.com. That's an easy way, francinek.com. Or you can go via The Divorce Doctor, www.thedivorcedoctor.co.uk. So either of those two routes will get you there. On the site, there's two specific free downloads. One is a first aid kit for people who are either thinking of separating or actually going through the divorce process. So that's a really great first aid kit. And there's another download, which is The Secrets of Successful Relationships, which touches on some of the things that we touched on in the call today. We'll both downloads do. I will also be keeping you informed with workshops that are coming up shortly. We're going to probably have one in June, around about the 20th of June, which is going to be First Aid to Soulmate. So if you're interested in that one, or you actually do have any questions that you want to ask me, or any suggestions that you might have that, you know, would really, really work in a workshop for you. You can tell from this call, I'm not actually lost for what I can give you, but I can always be surprised. So if there's something that hasn't come up, and specifically you would love to address, then please get in touch with me. You can call me on the London number, which is 044-208-416-0121. You can call me at any time and leave me a name and number, and we'll have a chat, because it's really good to talk. Emails are great and texting is great, but I like the spoken word. So I'm available. You know, don't think that it has to be via my office or via my secretary or via that. Just go for it, and we'll see what we come up with. Oh, and by the way, also get a copy of the book. Everything I talk about is in the book.
Great. And also just a question on how you work, Francine. Like you mentioned that when you're doing couples work that you see the individuals first. And just to give people an idea about what's a typical program that you work through with people who are experiencing relationship
okay.
challenges or even for okay. a single person who's looking to re-enter the dating arena.
Okay, so the program's really, really simple. I don't create dependency with my clients. So you're not going to be sitting on my couch for like 2 years or anything like that, or on my telephone for months to come. So we work hard, we work intensely, and we work quite quickly, which doesn't mean to say we're cutting corners in any way whatsoever. So we start off with an initial session, which is about 2.5 hours. Now, that might seem like a long time, but we've got a lot of work to do because we're going to go through all the old wiring and find out who you are and what you're all about. And then we have 3, maybe 4 follow-up sessions. And they're about 1.5 hours long. They can also either be face-to-face or on the telephone. It doesn't matter where in the world you are. It's just as effective. And so you've got a package of about sort of 4 to 5 sessions, depending how quickly you work. You perhaps could get it done in 4, but sometimes you can get it done in 5. And then we review after that. So you're going to get basically every skill that you could possibly need to understand where you are right now and get you where you want to be in relationship, and then some. And then after that, we're going to stay in touch with each other to keep you on track for however long you want to do it. But it doesn't mean that you have to be doing this for months at a time, because you and I would get terribly bored of each other if that was the case. So we work quickly, we work intensely, we work thoroughly, effectively, powerfully, and you get all the skills and tools that you need to have a really great relationship, whatever you decide to do.
Cool. That sounds like an excellent opportunity for anyone seeking that extra insight. And often when we're in the context of these relationships, it's very difficult to find clarity, and just having the guidance of someone that's sitting outside of that contextual frame, it does provide like a phenomenal opportunity to gather insight and to grow and to learn and to step more fully into the person you want to become. Excellent, Francine. So we've come to the end of our hour, and I was just wondering if you had any final last words for people sitting at home contemplating stepping into the space of creating great relationships.
Yeah, I think I would always say, just that line that I said, on the television, which is just always ask yourself, where am I partly responsible? Where am I partly responsible? And that way, you can move yourself into a place where you can get a greater perspective on your role in the relationship. And once you can move away from blame, once you can stop playing the blame game, you can start to create an understanding of the other person, whether you want to be with them or not. At least, at the very least, this is another human being who you once loved enough to be in relationship with, you know? So don't play the blame game. If you're out of relationship and you're going forward with your life, you really don't want to be going forward with this old baggage that holds you back, that gets you repeating patterns. Really think about, what's your compelling outcome for going forward with your life? And let's start taking some action around it.
Awesome. Some great advice there. Well, Francine, thank you so much for sharing your experience on the call today. Like, I've made some personal distinctions as well that I'll certainly grow from.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm sure everyone on the call will have as well.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Real, real pleasure, Damien. And, I just love what you're doing. And I am so, so thrilled that you have walked your talk and taken your business wherever it is that you wanted to take it and gone to California. It just goes to prove that if you're doing this work properly, you can do it anywhere in the world. And you're like a living legend, a living legend.
Thanks, Francine. We're certainly living in very exciting times where when you're standing in the service of other people, that you really can touch and inspire people all around the world.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly. How wonderful.
And also wanted to say a very big thank you to everyone at home. Your participation in this call week to week really is what makes it very, very special indeed. Thank you so much for sending in your questions, and also for all the feedback that you provide on the calls after the event as well. Now, this call itself has been recorded and will be made available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow morning. And all the recordings over the 3 years of our program are up on the site and are for free and are there to be of service to humanity. So if you do feel that this recording and the teachings learnt in this recording could be of service to a friend, a colleague, a loved one, or anyone that you come into contact with, do take that first step forward and share it freely. And that certainly goes for any of our other recordings as well. Great, so that brings us to the end of our call, and thanks once again, Francine, and thank you everyone at home.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye for now.